So, you guys might be wondering right now how me and Shanae are recording our podcast. Well, we use an amazing app called Anchor. Great things about it is that it's totally free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or your computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so you can be heard against Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. Trust me, you can listen to it any and everywhere, from your house to your bathroom to your job to your workout. Trust me, Anchor is an amazing app to you. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. So from 1 to 1,000 listeners, you can probably get paid for your podcast. It's everything that you need to make your podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. And tag me in your podcast so I can listen to it. What's going on, guys? Welcome to River City 93. We are starting off with some important guests on the show, but let me introduce first. My name is Elliot Barr.
My name is Shanae Duran II.
And our special host for this is our game breakdown, the 95 U.S. Open Cup win, is the Total Soccer Show, guys. I was totally about to mess up your show name, but fine, that's whatever. I'll start off with you, Derek. How are you?
I'm good. Who are these special guests? I'm excited to meet them.
Well, you are. Taylor sucks.
I mean, hurtful to begin with, but accepted and appreciated, and now the tone is set.
So exactly.
Good to go. All right.
You know, this is how we start off. So, like we said, we are here to finish up our DocuPod. We've done three interviews with Rob Ucrop, the Violet family, and Kamler. So go back. Make sure to check those out in your podcast feed. I think Daryl hasn't checked them out yet, so you need to go listen
to those. I apologize. I will listen.
You know, you're shorting us short on listeners. We need those. But we are here to bring in the experts to help us break down the 95 U.S. Open Cup game, which is between Richmond Kickers and El Paso Patriots. So first, let's just start off with El Paso in this 3-3-4 formation. I'm going to let y'all explain it because I had no idea what I was looking at. And by the way, all the names in the lineup were totally wrong, as y'all have told me. So
yeah, the starting lineup graphic, at least for the kickers, I can guarantee is very much wrong.
Didn't you message me about Richie Williams not being in it?
So literally, they put up the kickers starting 11.
Yeah.
And Richie Williams' name is not in there.
Lee Kalishaw's name isn't in there. Right? Causey's name isn't in there.
Really specifically, Williams' name isn't in there. And the commentator reads out the lineup and then we cut to Richie Williams doing the coin toss, and then he says, and here's Richie Williams, kicker's captain, doing the coin toss. And there's no, he doesn't notice the dissonance between what he's just read and what he's seen.
No.
which was establishing a pattern, I think, for the rest of the performance.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to just hate on the guy, but I'm guessing he wasn't a soccer guy.
I don't think any of them were soccer guys.
I don't think any of them. The broadcast was...
Well, one was Ty Keogh, who I think was the head coach at the time, and he mentions in there that his like over 30 team had entered the U.S. Open Cup that year and made it to like the fourth round or something.
Oh, yeah, I remember he did say that. Within the first 2-3 minutes of the game.
That makes more sense. Yeah, because he was often correcting the play-by-play.
He was, especially when the goal happened and they had no idea. The El Paso goal happens. They have no idea what happens, and the play-by-play just keeps guessing names, and he's like, no, that wasn't him. Like he's trying to keep it going.
So he wins the most patient man at war.
I think so.
Most definitely. So, like, Richmond played, what, a 4-4-2, and then we had Ucrop and Kamler up top. And by the way, can I take a moment just to point out, like, Rob Ucrop hair is, like, beautiful?
It's good.
Oh, yeah.
It's feathered. It's flowing.
Yeah.
I guarantee right now it's easier to maintain.
This is also probably very true. So, I mean, where do y'all guys want to start at? Because there's a lot that happens
actually
in this game.
I have a question for Taylor to start with. Were El Paso playing a 3-3-4?
I think they were both teams were in a 4-4-2.
That's what I think.
But the thing that kept throwing me off, because I completely forgot, I grew up playing sweeper stopper.
Yes.
And I forgot that that was a thing of that era. So it took me a really long time to be like, why aren't the two center backs standing next to each other? And once I realized that, it's basically like a 4-4-2 with two diamonds. Like your defense is in a diamond and their midfield was in a diamond as well. So
they almost had like
vertically
well.
Four players, basically.
Yeah, I think it's like fancy wing back sweeper system.
Yeah.
It's just a 4-4-2 with a sweeper stopper. Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
You can tell the system was very back to like throwback to the 90s. Like, look, what was it? What's the name for Italian football?
Calcio?
That's what it reminded me of. Like, it was
the Catenaccio, like the left the door, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it seemed like.
So, yeah, number of offsides in this game, one total, and we think maybe that wasn't even offside.
No, he was. Kamler was like a good couple feet onside at least. But the reason why there's no offside is because, like, as soon as the kickers would lose possession, that was the thing that stood out to me right away. Is like, I think in the third minute they lose possession, and John Hall, the sweeper, just sprints back 40 yards. Like, he's in his own 18 when El Paso have the ball, like, in their own half.
In their
like,
own
they,
half,
they
exactly.
were not trying to compress there at all. There wasn't much pressing going on.
Can we talk a little bit, for people who maybe haven't heard about this before, like, what was the idea with a sweeper? Like, why were both teams doing this in the mid-90s?
It's kind of almost like a free safety position. Like, he's the guy like, he's the guy back there. But it's almost like he's the stopgap between the goalkeeper and the center backs on the back line of defense. His job is literally, like, clean up anything. If it's a loose ball, anything like that. But, you know, when you start putting offsides into it, I think offside pretty much eliminates the sweeper position. But, yeah, that's pretty much what the sweeper was.
I mean, I think because, like, it's not even like a three center back system. That's the other confusing thing. Is like, because it would make sense if you're going, like, okay, we got three center backs and we got, like, one kind of holding midfielder ahead of them. But with, like, the fluidity of, like, Kevin Scott was sometimes, like, sitting in, like, the number six spot,
right?
Sometimes on the left, sometimes on the right. He kind of popped up everywhere. Mm-hmm. The thing that I took away from this, and, like, at least in the first 15 minutes or so, is that the other thing I was, like, drilled in the 90s was, if the left back goes forward, the left midfielder always stays home. If the right back goes forward, the right midfielder stays home.
Yeah.
You always have to have – it's almost like you have to have someone cover your shift before you can go do something.
Yeah, exactly.
This team definitely playing that type of style.
I mean, that, and that's a credit to Dennis Violet and the team, right, to be that organized. Mm-hmm. I also noticed the fullbacks basically didn't get forward very much because of that sweeper system. They end up coming more central, right? So left back and right back end up being almost half center backs each.
I think so, and I say I think so not because I think you're wrong, but because this was off YouTube on a VHS copy, and it was
You can definitely tell.
I know
VHS.
That they are humans down there. I know there are red circles and there are white circles, and that's about what I could do.
The
for
numbers
a little bit
at
of that
least
one.
Were pretty blurry. Right?
You can definitely tell it was like recorded on someone's VHS because it kept jumping and.
Yeah.
All the night. Like, what was the Budweiser commercial we saw? Tom Bramble's commercial.
Yeah.
The Keiko commercial. You can definitely tell.
There was like a Cruise Lines commercial. I sent Daryl the screen cap. There's a dude in the pool who looks exactly like Landon Donovan. And it weirded me out. I was like, are you Landon Donovan's biological father? Is that what this is? Landon Donovan's a time traveler, maybe?
Oh, man.
It was
super 90s. It was super 90s.
It felt weird. It felt weird watching all those commercials and just the style back then. And of course, the jerseys were huge. Fitted at all. I mean, you've got players running.
Still had the little collar, the little baby collar.
Had the little baby collar, and then when they're running, it's like a flag flapping in the wind behind them.
I will willingly die on my deathbed saying that is the best kicker's jersey.
It was the best
kicker's jersey.
It made me want to eat at Arby's.
Our Pelso sponsor was what, Pepsi?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So then I was like sitting there watching the game. I think I texted you. I was like, yeah, I want Arby's and Pepsi now. I don't know why. But I think I want it.
They also like had Pepsi colors. Like, I don't know if that was integrated in the sponsorship, but it really was like the Pepsi blue, the Pepsi red, and a white jersey. It was.
Yeah.
It seemed like they definitely got some money for that one. I'm hoping they did at least.
Early MLS, paid marketing days. Like, here you go. Take this and we'll be your team. That's what it seemed like.
Here's what I'd love to talk about. Which players impressed us and why?
I got my
list
of MVP.
Which kickers players?
Lee Kalashaw.
Lee Kalashaw.
So I've always heard how Lee Kalashaw was like this very cerebral player, but watching him play, like he was very like Pirlo-esque. Because there were moments he could stand back there and just like ping balls to the side, but then he'll make like that very late run, like on the goal that he assisted. I still think that ball went over the line. I will die on that hill. Mm-mm. But Lee Kalashaw for me impressed me the most.
It's going to be a lonely hill.
It probably will be.
Very lonely hill.
I was impressed by his work rate.
I was impressed by his hairstyling once again. I mean, I like that he went for the ponytail but still had the bangs hanging out. Sweep them back every 12 seconds. That was a good look for him. It was a good look. I had Kalashaw on there. I think my MVP, I have my short list of MVP, and Rob Ukrop is number one.
Is that right?
Just because I think he did, especially after the kickers go down to 10 men in what, like the 51st or something like that?
Yeah.
Like he is up there by.
The 58th if you're the commentators.
Yes, exactly. But he is up there by himself doing a lot of running. They mentioned that it was like high 90s, I think, at that point. And he is up there trying to hold up play, trying to make something happen. He's the one that draws the foul that leads to El Paso's red card that makes both teams play with 10. So I felt like all of the thankless running he was doing combined with the fact that he scores the goal and takes the first penalty and takes it very calmly.
Buries it.
I was impressed by Rob Ukrop.
Yeah. I would say Richie Williams looked like the best footballer on the field.
Yeah, I think that's right.
The best complete footballer.
He was kind of like defensive midfielder for the kickers. You mentioned two diamonds. He was like at the base of the second diamond, the midfield diamond. But then he would run everywhere, close things down, win the ball. And then when he had the ball, he looked the most secure. Essentially, he looked impossible to take the ball off of. He would turn in tight circles and then play a 1-2. And I feel like the kicker's best football was whenever it went through midfield through Richie Williams, it would be short passing, short passing, short passing. Anywhere else, it was like John Hall bangs it long to the wing. You know what I'm saying? So it's like good football every time it went through Richie Williams, and more direct football into the channels, into the strikers, whenever anyone else was on the ball.
He was my number three MVP pick.
Okay.
I would say, not talking in terms of an MVP, but me and Elliot, we talked about this before, the partnership between Ucrop and Kamler.
Okay.
It wasn't exactly a big man, fast man combo. It was basically a big man, fast man, but they literally would switch roles. Mm-hmm. You'd have one play where Rob Ucrop is winning the ball in the air, holding up play, and Kamler runs in behind. And literally the next time they're coming up the field, it's the opposite. And that to me is something that's really hard to defend against. You don't know who's going to hold up. You don't know who's going to run. And it was really, really awesome seeing their partnership up front.
It was also hard to tell who was who at the moment.
A little bit.
Yeah, you know, no names on the back of the jersey, just numbers that all look the same.
Like, if you look really hard, you look and see, okay, that guy has shorter hair, so that's probably Kamler.
Like, I think that's why it took me like 20 minutes to figure out who got the red card.
I mean, you're not wrong. Like, that was really telling to me that Kevin Scott, for people who don't know, is probably like 6'4". At least he looked very big. He's got the big dreads, and yet you could not tell that was him who got the red card. Yeah. Usually with like HD, you can sort of tell at least like skin color differences, and usually like big hairstyle stands out. In this game, I had no idea who was who. I mean, it was really, really strange.
You can tell like how far we have came in like television production based off this game.
Yeah.
Like, you can tell how far we have came.
I especially enjoyed the when they had the scoreboard graphic that was like you couldn't see through it. And anytime there was a player who got the ball in that spot, it was like, well, they're just eclipsed by the MasterCard logo for a while.
Exactly.
Oh, back out.
Yeah. I would argue that you could tell Kevin Scott was missing by how the kicker started playing immediately afterwards. Because the first 50
chaos?
Minutes, well, Richie Williams would win the ball in midfield and just behind him, Scott would win the ball. Anything in the air or any time El Paso tried to fire it in at the kicker's defense, as soon as he was missing, the kickers were in a little bit of trouble, right?
They couldn't get the ball out of their own hands.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you see, like, in the moments, maybe like the 10 minutes before El Paso eventually score, it is just like 3-on-3, 6-year-old soccer, like blobs of color just moving from like 6 people over here, now 6 people slide over here. There wasn't a lot of shape, I feel like, for the kickers. There were just sort of a lot of last-ditch defending.
Did they basically drop Williams back into Scott's position?
I think so. Yeah, I think they dropped him back.
And then they swapped out Kamler for who takes the eventual Michael Brady. Brady comes in, I think, is more of a defender. So they go that route.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. But it's really noticeable to me on El Paso's equalizer, the kickers were so, so deep.
Yep.
Right? Everybody had dropped off to the point where I've actually forgotten the name of the goal scorer, but when it's squared
Amparan,
when it's squared to him, he is wide open because all the kickers players have just, they're in their own box, and I think they start on the like 4 yards from goal and they push out to 10 yards from goal. So they're all just crowded in the box, and he just got, that's why he's completely unmarked. He's got acres of space to hit that shot.
I mean, it was, with that said, though, I did feel like I texted you. I think I was like, this game is, I think the pass completion rate is like 12% or something. And you were like, I think your response was, just a reminder, this game is 120 minutes long. And I was contemplating maybe skipping through. But then I think Dennis Violette, the kicker's coach, he makes some good changes, especially at halftime. I think he pushes Kalashaw further forward. That's a big reason.
Or at least gives him license to go forward.
Yeah, and I think that's where that goal comes from, is there's another person involved in that attack. It's not just Kamler and Ucrop, which I felt like it was routinely in that first half.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And pushing Kalashaw in, it just creates that overload. And then Ben Crawley's ability to spot an opening and play the ball in was well done.
Well, can we talk about the kicker's goal then?
Yep. Oh, yeah. Listen, I think, I mean, to your point, right before we go into the kicker's goal, I think him pushing Kalashaw more up front freed up a lot of stuff for him. And it allowed him to kind of do whatever he wanted. Like, he could be attacking, he could be defensive, he could kind of just be there. But, yes, let's go into this goal. Like, Lee Kalashaw, he created his goal, one, outran everyone, two, and the ball went out.
And kept it in bounds. Yeah, that was the most impressive thing.
I'm telling you, it was VAR.
If there was VAR, it would have still been a goal.
I wonder if maybe you're, like, do you ever see the thing where somebody's, like, upload a video to YouTube and it's, like, from NBC, but they've, like, reversed the image so you can't see that the peacock is reversed? I wonder if that's what you did, if you just, like, flipped it out of bounds and, like, you weren't, like, quite sure which side it was on.
I was convinced that ball was out.
But the ball's on the line, right?
Yeah.
And the ball has to completely go over the line.
I feel like Elliot. decided the ball was out and has not yet gone back and looked to make sure.
This is also probably very true. I looked at it and was also, oh, that ball's out. And this is also like me, like after multiple like VAR stuff, I'm like, oh yeah, VAR would have called that out. Like in my head. I think that's how bad VR has gotten.
All right, but let's accept that we live in a democracy and that you were outvoted by 75%.
So, yes, that ball is it. But did he nutmeg the guy to get the ball back in to cut it back across? To just a wide open Rob Ucrop that was just standing there?
No, I think the guy kind of froze up and Kalashaw just poked it along the end line and then cut it back.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So the guy didn't open his legs up. If anything, he had his legs too close together because he probably didn't move.
He couldn't, like yeah. And I think everyone else also froze. They thought the ball was out. But all the kickers players, from what I saw, all the kickers players were still switched on and were still trying to make moves. And that's why
Ucrop was in the right spot at the right time.
I mean, he was in the right spot at the right time, but he was still switched on. And in fact, he even took a couple of steps either to the left or right to open up that space a little more because all of the El Paso players just stopped, thought, oh, that ball's out of bounds. But Lee Kalashaw kept it in and just slots the ball right to him.
And then two El Paso defenders charge Ucrop as he receives the ball. And I don't know if Ucrop deliberately fires it through the defender's legs. I think he's more just like going
for that. I
think
if you ask him, he'd tell you he would.
I mean, I think I don't know about that, but I will say that like that he doesn't try to just smash it first time because there was a bunch of that in this game where there should have been more goals and there were wide open shooting opportunities and the ball was sliced wide because
directly before this, Davy Stewart from El Paso was through on goal, right? Because John Hall did some statue defending and Davy Stewart was through on goal and sliced it wide.
Right. They did not play power and finesse. They played power and power. And I think to Ucrop's credit, like he takes that touch to set himself up to then shoot with his second, and I think maybe that buys him a little bit of time to spot that opportunity as opposed to just firing it and hoping.
It's just the one bit of finesse in the whole game.
It might could be. I did enjoy his celebration. It was a very Eric Cantona, like, you're welcome. I'm going to just stand here with my hands in the air.
The hair just flowing.
I mean, that's one thing I did notice, and especially with the montage they had before the game, like doing highlights of the key players, they showed one of his previous goals, and it was the same thing, just like that.
Yeah.
It was unavoidable. Like, you know.
I mean, there you go. It's unavoidable. It's inevitable. But it's a good finish from him. It's obviously great work from Kalashaw. And then the ball from, I believe it's Crowley, plays that ball. Or Crowley plays that ball. And he's got that left foot, and he kind of like bends it in, but then it goes outside. And I think the defender is kind of totally flummoxed by that, which is why it ends up going to Kalashaw.
This is kind of like a short, long thing, right? Like Kalashaw wins a knockdown into, I want to say he gives it to Ucrop's strike partner, whose name?
Kemmler.
Who gives it back. Then gives it to Ucrop, gives it to Crowley, and then Kalashaw's on his horse, right? Mm-hmm. Down the line. And that's when Crowley hits that perfect left-footed ball. Probably the best pass of the game.
Oh,
it's up there. It's pretty.
It's definitely up there.
Yeah. There weren't a lot of memorable passes in this game. There were a lot of long balls that maybe occasionally came off.
Can we talk about John Hall for a second?
Yeah. I was waiting for someone to bring it up.
I know.
He was a sweeper. He was covering ground. He would get to a lot of balls that went through. But did he just seem to just bang it as long as he could every time he got the ball?
Yeah, in the general vicinity of a kicker's player.
He did the Elliot Barr style of defending. Take the ball anywhere that's not near me. That's what he did.
We were, Daryl and I were watching 28th minute. We were watching, like, I think roughly at the same time period, but I could gauge it by the texts that were coming through. And you at one point said, like, I don't know if John Hall could complete a pass. And 2 minutes later in the 28th minute, he tries to square it across the field and he just hits it 15 yards ahead of his teammate and it's just intercepted by El Paso and they go the other way. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, Daryl just saw that. Now I know where Daryl is.
That's why I thought like short passes he seemed to have trouble with, but just hitting it long and hard, he was perfect.
And then, they say in that game that like the kickers were routinely playing in like 100-degree weather with like 60 and 70% humidity. So I'm assuming that they were all pretty fit, but it felt a little bit with the way he was defending and specifically the way he would retreat 30 yards. Mm-hmm. It felt like the thing that we've experienced in adult league soccer where there's a person who's maybe not as fit as they used to be and they're like, I'm just going to back off a little bit and hope I don't get beat. Yeah,
so you don't get beat for pace.
And there's a little bit of that as well. Elliot's slowly raising his hand in the air. And it felt like there was a little bit of that, of he maybe was focused on not getting caught in possession, not being put in 1v1 situations because he was one time and almost got beat pretty badly, and it was Mike Clark who had to come in and save him at the last minute.
I hope John Hall's not listening to this.
I don't know. We'll find out.
We'll see.
We'll
probably get the angry text.
Reputation. So if he is, we'll probably hear about it.
Yeah.
Or he'll just kick the door open with his lefty.
Yeah.
He got some power behind it. He had a few hits. Not his penalty, but a few free kicks.
So he might miss the door. Probably will miss the door.
Yeah, well, he had the one free kick that he hit directly into the wall. That was in like the third minute. And then he has the other one that he almost scores on right before halftime. So yeah, it's a mixed bag from John Hall.
It's very hit or miss.
Can we talk about Causey for a minute? Because he was my other one that I was really impressed by. Because he's got like the full extension save near the end of the game.
Yes.
And then just very calm in the penalties. Just steps up. I think he saves... No, he saves their second and fourth ones, but just very calmly saving penalties and very calm overall. He was a little bit like Iceman demeanor to me.
Also, exactly. I want to see Gokrims get back to like the eye paint. Like, I want to see, you know.
War paint?
Yeah, I want that. Because he had it on like the whole game. I think he takes it off during the penalties, but I know he has it on like the
penalties. I was wondering, because I didn't see it as much during the penalties. I do wonder if he was like, all right, now it's time to be serious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he had it on.
So was that sunblock? Or was it just.
No, like football players wear it underneath, like. Yeah. To this day, I still don't know what it does.
The reason why is because when you're playing, especially when it's sunny and hot, you start to sweat, and then you get the reflection off of the sweat, and that can affect your earring. Your hearing, your vision. So they do it to kind of prevent that sun reflection. Mm.
Reflection off your cheeks.
It's just like imagine if you are sweating, and then you've got like light coming on. You just like the moisture will. Be reflective, basically.
Huh.
So if you're putting the black on, it like deadens that a little bit.
How am I just learning about this?
Because you didn't grow up watching American football in the 90s.
Yeah, exactly.
It became an art form.
Yeah,
it did. Full war paint.
And then you had like the guys that would just have it and they write stuff on it.
It would be like the name of the team imprinted on it. And
or you get like Tim Tebow, you get like the Bible verses. That's the most famous one.
And then there's the dude in Any Given Sunday, if you watch that movie, who's like, I'm a background extra. The only way I'm going to be on camera. And he like fully like paints his entire face. Like, he's got it, like, running down from his eyes. It's, like, half his face is painted with eye black. It's an interesting look you went for.
It is.
Yeah, so, I mean, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the penalty shootout. I can't say I enjoyed much of extra time, because that was 10v10 in very hot conditions, and it felt like the kickers were sort of just holding on for dear life.
It was just, let's get through this thing.
And you can tell, like, both of the red cards were just, like, last year. It's like, I'm tired of running. You're running too fast. I'm going to take you out. Like, what was it?
Yeah, especially the one on Ucrop. The one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
in the 83rd minute. Yeah. Oh, you could tell. That was like, I'm tired of running.
I'm not
going to
chase
out.
You. Just sit down.
This is why people don't have sweepers anymore, because of that kind of tackle.
When you all talk to Ucrop or Kamler, how much detail did y'all get into? Because I really want to know what happened with that Kevin Scott red card. Because it seemed like he was this very calm, like, on-the-ball player, and yet that's a, like, two-footed, straight leg.
Yeah, it's
like,
dangerous,
it's
right?
The definition of a red card, basically.
Yeah, I imagine it was sent off.
We didn't die.
But, like, I guess what I'm saying is, like, was that a red mist moment? Like, what was it? Because it's literally a minute after the goal he gets sent off.
Yeah.
And it sort of, to me, it was like, what brought about that level of, like, I'm going to go in and wreck this dude. Like, that doesn't just happen in my mind.
To me, that tackle seems in place for this game. There were just loads of slide tackles, and he just slightly mistimed it.
Yeah. It was a physical game.
It was a very physical game. I mean,
you can even tell, like, the commentators didn't even know he got sent out to like, what, 10 minutes later? And it was like, oh, yeah, he's gone.
He's gone.
But
there's missing.
The one that I was like, oh, this is a different era, is the 35th minute. There's, I think, a corner for the kickers. Ben Crawley goes up to win the header, and the El Paso player just straight runs into him, like as though it's like a wide receiver going up to catch a ball. And he just runs into Crawley. Crawley gets knocked over, and it's a foul against Crawley.
Yes, that way.
And
I was confused.
You see him like, lose his mind. And the color commentator, Ty Keough, the benefit of the doubt will be given to the defensive player, as is normally the case in the penalty area. And I was like, if ever there were a sign that things are different. That is not the case anymore.
That is a clear indication.
A lot of fouls in this one. Some that were called. Initially, I was like, oh, he's kind of policing this one. Okay, he gave that card there. Then it kind of got a little bit looser as the game went on, for sure.
There was definitely one where I don't remember who was running literally down the middle of the field and pings a pass wide.
Mm-hmm.
And the ball is halfway to its destination, and a player just comes in and takes him out.
Does he go up in the air?
He went.
John Hall.
Yes,
John
that
Hall.
Was John Hall. When John Hall.
I remember that one. That's
he's good at certain things.
Yeah. The thing is, John Hall, he pings that ball wide, and he's almost out of frame when he gets completely clobbered.
It's the thing. He plays it wide. And there's no advantage given, and it goes wide, and then the kicker's player who goes wide too, I think it was Kari Stockton, he also gets fouled.
Exactly.
But in fouling, the defender touches the ball and it rolls out, and the ref's like, at corner, I guess? And it's from that corner that Ben Crawley then gets fouled in the box.
It was
a weird couple minutes there.
You can tell there was a lot of, like, subtle, quote, like, judgment calls. He was like, Maybe? I don't know. He was like, flip a coin, I guess. Someone will take it. Yeah.
Any other key points for you, Mr. Grove?
No, I think I've covered everything that I saw. Yeah.
It was an interesting game. The Richmond, I don't know if y'all caught on this, but the goalkeeper for Richmond, he dives the same direction except for the one that he saves. So he dives to his left every time, and then I think the one he saves, he dives to his right.
The second one or the fourth one? Because he saved the two.
Yeah, he dives to his right, the shooter's left, the first three times. He dives to his left, the shooter's right, the fourth time. Yeah. And he saves, the second and the fourth. Yeah. Got it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do think if you go back, he would have to retake those, and he might have been sent off because I think every single penalty he is like 3 yards off his line.
I don't think they were really,
No, he was doing the Brianna Scurry of like sprint out 6 yards and then dive one way or the
other. Yup. Like,
oh man,
that's my big lesson from watching this is that soccer's changed.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
it has.
Loads of tiny things like the sweeper systems you just wouldn't do now because soccer now is all about compressing space and controlling the game. Mm-hmm. Two sweepers means the game is just stretched long, right? Yep. And there's loads of space and craziness to play into. The keepers coming off the line is a whole different thing. Like, everything's changed.
Yeah, and it's weirdly counterintuitive because you would think that, well, if it's all spread out, if everybody's defending deep and you've got all this space, then you can ping the ball around. There can be lots of possession. But what I think kept happening was you'd get like Richie Williams on the ball. He maybe is the bad example because he could actually do stuff.
Yeah.
But you get a lot of other players on the ball, and they actually don't have anybody near them. They don't have anybody within like 25 yards of them, so then you can't kind of move the ball quickly.
And it's
there
really
is no
tempting. Like, you're like, oh, Rob Ucrop's one-on-one with that defender.
Let's hit it long.
I'm going to blast it into that channel, and he can chase it. Yeah. And that's what the game ends up being.
And it definitely did feel like if you look up USISL now, which is where the kickers were coming from, I think it redirects you to the League 2, USL League 2 page on Wikipedia.
Okay.
And I think like that helped me understand, like, yeah, it's a bunch of college guys who are sort of like, like, they've played together a lot, but there were those moments when it was like, ooh, that you thought someone was there? There was nobody there. There was a couple of those moments, like, that pass went to somebody that maybe saw a ghost? I'm not sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's also testament to, like, how much MLS has done to bring soccer along in the United States, right? If you watch the, like, the U.S. Open Cup final now, or you watch the, like, any sort of championship game now, it's nothing like this, right?
I did find myself going back and watching, like, other kickers' performances in the U.S. Open Cup, though, after this one. Yeah. Like,
because I think they have, like, a bunch. I think they have, like, 2008. I know for definitely they have the Richmond beat Sporting KC.
That's 2011, I think.
2011 when they have a game for 08 and they have like another one.
They go to the semifinals.
2008 was the LA Galaxy, I think. So I remember being at City Stadium and watching them beat the LA Galaxy.
Yeah.
Donovan played the second half and Abel Gervier played the whole game.
I forgot about him. But 2011 is the one where I think they go to the semifinals and eventually get knocked out by the Chicago Fire.
Yes.
That tells you how different the times are.
Yeah.
I don't know who wins that game this year.
That is very true.
But it was cool. It was cool to go back and see like the old Kickers logo. Some like Kalashov was an institution for me growing up. Rob Ucrop is obviously an institution, as are the Ucrops in Richmond. So it was cool to see some of those moments, and then some of the players like Brian Kamler, I kind of forgot about until you see him playing. You're like, oh right, he was really good. So it was cool to see. I appreciate that.
I just want the jerseys back. Like, the blue pants. I really just want the jersey.
That's all I want. Yeah, that kit was
pretty
nice.
Also, TV production is totally different than what it is now. Like,
yeah, we're lucky, right?
We're so lucky.
The commentators basically know what's happening. And you don't have the scoreboard covering over the players.
Yeah.
Well, just the little things like that we take for
the
granted.
The unique thing was, I think it was Ucrop told us, it might be in the podcast or not, but I remember he told us about how they won the game and they came back and there was no fanfare or anything. Like, even the TV stations didn't even know. And then someone, I think, told the news station and they were like, oh yeah, Richmond Kickers, but they spelled kickers wrong. It was KCIKERS. How they spelled it.
That's just a typo.
That takes some effort to misspell that.
Yeah.
And that just tells you like how relevant soccer was in the 90s.
There you go.
So, yeah.
But I actually, like, with that in mind, I found their celebrations weirdly muted at the end of it. Like, you played 120 minutes, a man down for most of it. And when Michael Brady scores the winning penalty, he eventually goes over and, like, jumps into Kevin Scott's arms. But everybody is just sort of like, yeah, okay, like, let's go home. Now I'm tired. Like, it was not this big celebration. For
I think there might have been heat. Yeah. Like, the heat might have been kicking in around that time.
There was. And then that was the other – my final one was the commentators not knowing what cramping was, apparently. Because, like, all the players were routinely cramping. And they were like, they keep getting injured, but then they seem to be able to, like, shake it off somehow. And it's like, yeah, because they're stretching and eating a banana, man. Like, it's not, I guess it is science, but it's not rocket science.
It's lactic acid science.
Yes, exactly.
That's probably it. So, that is the breakdown of the 95 U.S. Open Cup. I do have three questions I want to ask you guys.
Yeah.
About the U.S. Open Cup at all. So, can you guys name me the three teams in the DMV, for those who don't know the DMV, that is D.C., Maryland, and Virginia.
And it's where you get your driver's license.
Pretty much. Yeah. Awesome. that have won the U.S. Open Cup. And bonus points if you can name the year.
Three teams
from D.C., Maryland, and Virginia.
I can do DC at least one. I mean, the Richmond Kickers 95, DC United 99?
Close. You're close. One team has won it three times.
Oh, didn't DC United win it in 2013?
Mm-hmm.
There we go. 13's
1 year.
Did they win it in 2004 as well?
Close.
I keep being close, but I'm wrong. So there you go.
mine was correct.
Yeah. There you go. So I was right with the Kickers in 95. So we're 1-1.
We have two, right? We just need one more. Is it DC or Kick? It's DC United, right? There's not some weird Maryland team from 1922.
Oh, I thought you were saying there's three distinct teams that have won.
There's
it.
Three distinct teams.
Okay,
there's
yes, three there different is one teams. More.
What, DC has won it three times, but can you name
it? Is there another team in? Is there another team in like the 1920s?
There's
or
another
something?
Team in DC.
Oh, the Washington Diplomats.
No, this might be the hardest one for you to get.
It's probably some team that I don't know the name of, right?
España 1987.
Wow,
they were represented out of DC.
What year did they win?
1987.
Okay.
DC won it 96, 2008, and 2013. Richmond 1995.
They won it 96, DC?
Yeah.
They won it 96. I didn't realize they did the double that year.
Yeah.
I just remember the Eddie Pope winner. That's all.
Yeah, I remember that one.
All right, next question. Which state has the most U.S. Open Cup titles?
Ooh.
Which state?
Probably New York.
Correct. New York with 26. Can you guess who's second?
New Jersey? No. California, Texas?
California. Yeah. California with 15.
Okay.
But most of the teams from New York are like 1930s, 1940s,
yep. Yep. Mm-hmm.
1950s.
Go on, Brooke Hatton.
Yeah. All about Cosmos.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
I think they say in the broadcast that the team that won it before the Kickers in 1994 was like it was like the California Greek Diplomats United of Los Angeles or something. Something like,
I actually have the page here. Uh-huh. Greek American AC from
there it
San
is.
Francisco.
There it is.
Beat Bavarian SC from Milwaukee.
The Bavarian SC makes sense. I didn't know there was a large Greek population in San Francisco. I've learned something new today.
Yeah.
I've learned
something new. You learn something new every day. All right, and the last question is, how many teams with the name Kickers in it have won the U.S. Open Cup?
Three.
Nailed it. Los Angeles Kickers, Richmond Kickers, and St. Petersburg Kickers.
I'm shot in the dark there. I was just thinking it's probably more than two, but not that many. I'm going three.
It's three. A good, confident guess.
Thanks. If you say it confidently, even if you're wrong, it sounds like, oh, but maybe he knows something.
Mysterious in the dark. All right. Well, that is a wrap up of our DocuPod series. It's been a fun little off-season series that we've done.
Hey, Elliot.
Yeah.
No, you suck. I waited the whole way.
That is a great way how to end the podcast. Great how to end it. But we want to say thank you for you guys helping us do the tactical breakdown, because who better to have it than guys that have mastered it for our podcast? Made thousands? Maybe millions? I don't know.
Probably. Of what? Shows?
Dollars.
Dollars is definitely not
millions. Downloads? Maybe.
I mean, more than us. I think we got 15 cents our name. So, yeah, we'll take it. But yeah, you can find the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all your podcast apps. You can follow us on the BGN Network. And with that being said, guys, keep it cool.